Hello and welcome to the Right to Sunrule podcast, as truthful as resources permit. My name's Jimmy and I voted Leave in the EU referendum in 2016.
And my name's Jazza, and like everybody listening to this podcast, I am relishing the chance to partake in the largest piece of democracy that Europe has seen in a very long time. Obviously, the Eurovision Song Contest, who gives a shit about the Euro elections? I personally probably going to give my vote to France.
Why France?
Well, they have a kind of like genderqueer Muslim Moroccan... why are you laughing? Moroccan guy dancing with an overweight deaf ballet dancer on stage, and it's basically Social Justice Warrior in a stage performance, and a really nice wig. So I'll probably be giving my vote that to there. Do you know which act you're going to support for the Eurovision?
I'm not participating this year as a protest against the fact that we're still in the EU.
As we know, the European Union and the Eurovision Song Contest inextricably linked. That's
very
why
much,
Australia take
so.
Part now.
Yeah, and Israel.
And Israel, yes. And previously Morocco and Turkey too. Those famed European nations. I mean, part of Turkey is in Europe, but like the tiniest part. Anyway, I voted to remain in the European Union in 2016.
Why is Eurovision so aggressively queer?
Because it is the epitome of camp and nationalism.
Those things don't obviously go together. I mean, I know the Nazis in a certain light can be, you know, they were a bit camp, weren't they, with like the uniforms,
yeah,
and the march.
Tom Ford, wasn't it? No, not Tom Ford. What's that? Hugo Boss. Isn't Hugo Boss the person who designed
nice,
the...
Yeah. Very fashion conscious.
Very fashion
conscious. I don't want to stereotype here, but... Mm-hmm. There is a stereotype there.
Yeah, that, but there's a stereotype. The irony of them killing all of those gay men.
Yeah.
Who knew?
Well, most very manly things, and fascism is very manly, are also very homoerotic on another level. So.
Yeah, like all of those fitness channels on YouTube that are just people getting workout tips from oiled-up men in gyms with their shirts off. And I'm like, isn't that a little bit gay?
I mean, weightlifting is pretty gay, I think. And it is disconcerting when you're like, you know, you're trying to perfect your form on a given exercise, yeah, and you're just looking at this guy's tits, and it's kind of mesmerizing.
Isn't that wonderful? Anyway, we meet up with
you. For you, actually. You're like, god damn it, another erection.
It's very annoying.
Just trying to work on my bench press here.
Yeah, I have to go away. I have blinkers on in the gym. We meet regularly to talk about politics, social issues, and current events. Jimmy has not let me talk about the Eurovision this year, but that's fine.
I didn't like veto it ahead of time.
But it's often such a battle to get it on the discussion topics that I decided not to. And there's quite a lot happening this week. Speaking of which, what are we going to talk about?
So I thought we'd kick it off with a classic free speech story. I can't even say speech properly. that's how censored the times we are living in are. I can't even say free speech. But Daddy Baker, alleged comedian and BBC presenter. I don't know how funny he is. He appears on panel
I think he's funny to a very specific demographic.
Yeah.
And that demographic are people who don't have senses of humour.
Okay, harsh. But he tweeted an alleged joke about the royal baby, which came off as a bit racist, yeah, I think.
A little bit racist.
I don't think he intended it that way, which is kind of the crux of the argument. But it did come off that way.
He lost his job. He got fired off of the back of tweeting a BBC presenting gig, where he tweeted this image of... a chimpanzee dressed as a baby saying, oh, the royal baby, the new royal baby, the baby Archie.
Mountbatten, Windsor.
He actually Lennon. and
Tommy Robinson.
The son, the mixed race baby of Meghan Markle and Harry Windsor?
See, I think legally speaking, he's just Prince Harry. I bet he gets out the passport and it is just Prince Harry.
But how does that work for like databases and stuff?
I don't know.
Because you have to have a... Anyway. What's he signed up for on Facebook with?
There was this this podcast I was listening to of Lord Cooper, who was, the among other things, the pollster for the Remain campaign. Mm. So, a very talented man. He actually, after he was ennobled, complained about, like, the difficulty of, say, opening a bank account when your legal name is, like, Lord Cooper.
Poor man.
That is a first world problem.
That's actually the first world problem. We're going to be talking about whether or not it was the BBC were right to let him go from his presenting job, and the implications of being able to make a mistake and then apologise for it and keep your job.
Yeah.
Sound good?
That does sound good.
Excellent.
What are we doing next?
As well as the Eurovision, the European elections.
Oh my God.
Are officially happening, yes. In the UK. I found it pretty douchey that the British government officially announced that we were going to be taking part literally on the last day that you were able to register to vote. I thought that was cutting it pretty fine. It's also been quite fun to see nobody campaign apart from the Brexit Party and Change UK try really hard to...
I've got Labour leaflets through my... My door.
I've got a Labour leaflet right here.
I have the same one. It's of Jeremy Corbyn looking very stern, I think. Actually quite professional for him.
Yeah, I mean, his top button could be done up.
It's a bit ambiguous.
Ambiguity there.
I mean, that is as ambiguous as Labour's Brexit position. Precisely. Suitably enough.
Yeah. He can be everything to every person.
For the many, not the few.
And... as well as seeing a massive surge in the EU election polls for the Brexit Party, Nigel Farage's new party, which means that he is all over the news again, and how we've missed him, we are also seeing a load of conservative politicians position themselves to be the next leader and therefore Prime Minister after Theresa May leaves, which she has made no attempt to kind of clarify when that might be.
Beyond her saying after this phase of the Brexit process, which she did months and months ago.
Yeah, because she's kind of safe, she's protected from any challenges until the end of this year, essentially.
Unless the 1922 Committee of Backbench Tories change the rules to make it 6 months, which would be... actually June.
Summer leadership contest, that would be nice. I've found the whole thing really odd to have all of these politicians say that they wanted to run to be leader when there isn't, like...
A vacancy.
Like, literally trying to kick her before she was pushed. So we were talking about the EU elections and this weird kind of jostling for the Conservative membership. And then finally... got some YouTube drama. It's very exciting. James Charles, who is a makeup guru, I'm sure you're aware of.
Isn't he 19 years old?
He's 19 years
old. You can't really be a guru when you're 19.
To his credit, he is very, very talented at makeup.
Okay.
Is worth about $12 million from like makeup endorsements, and he has his own line and stuff like that. He has lost over 1 million subscribers in a single day, which is rather dramatic.
Do you think, the biggest plunge in followers for any YouTube channel in that period of time?
It's certainly up there.
Did PewDiePie lose a lot of followers after?
That's what I'm thinking. Also
after
has...
the Nazi controversy.
The Nazi thing, yeah. But I think...
It was an anti-Jewish thing. It was like Kid All Jews.
Death to All Jews.
Death to All Jews thing. Mm-hmm.
The classic.
See episode, whatever it was, where we discussed that.
So he lost over 1 million subscribers because of allegations that he has been predatory towards straight men and
the
using
actual,
his
the
power.
The literal quote was, turned straight men gay.
Mm-hmm.
Which is
impossible.
I thought that was funny.
Why did you think that was funny?
Because it made it sound as though, like, you know, he's had some sort of magical power. Like, I mean, that is real gay conversion therapy.
Yeah, it's reverse gay conversion therapy. I've actually been trying it for 130 episodes with you, Jimmy. Yet you still insist to wear denim on denim. But we're going to talk about kind of like YouTubers.
That was very good shade. No. That was good.
We're going to talk about, once again, YouTubers and kind of like this new age of celebrity and... how they end up misusing a lot of this power a lot of the time. And also just enjoy talking shit about the beauty community of YouTubers. So good?
Which I'm intimately familiar with.
Yes, yes, of course.
Yes.
Right. Music, money, begging, episode.
Correct.
Yeah, that's the hard one.
If you've made it this far through the podcast, I'm assuming you at least somewhat enjoy what we do, and if you'd like to support us financially, you can go to patreon.com/rightdishonourable. It doesn't cost a great deal of money to keep this thing going, but we do need money for hosting and that sort of thing. Our current patrons include David Warner, Emerson Spartz, Gemma Cumming, John O, Matt, Michael Costa and Ollie McGregor. Thank you very much for anyone who's currently supporting us and anyone who has done so previously. If you'd like to join them, go to patreon.com/rightdishonourable.
Jimmy, on a scale of 1 to Nazi, how racist do you think the image was that Danny Baker tweeted out of the royal baby as a chimpanzee?
Is that 1 to Nazi?
1 to Nazi, yeah.
Okay. I mean, it's more towards...
It's also a logarithmic scale, so if you can bear that in mind.
Okay, well, I don't even really understand maths that well, so... It's going to be difficult, but in terms of, if you judge it by intent, the one, if you judge it by the effect, then Nazi, I suppose. That sort of is the you know, the binary here is that, you know, the way it, if you look at it, Royal Baby, the tagline is Royal Baby Leaves Hospital, and it's two posh people in a black and white photo of a little baby chimp. I think it's a chimp. Allegedly, it's a chimp. Dressed up in a suit with a little walking stick. Dressed up like Winston Churchill, basically.
Bit odd.
Between the two of them. And given the amount of, you know, the fixation on Meghan Markle's mixed race heritage, you know, it does come off, I think, when you look at it as a racist image. I mean, when I was originally reading up on this topic... Obviously you get the reports, you know, person has said something offensive and then it's just described in very vague terms. And naturally most people don't embed the actual...
Yeah.
So you're like, well, I need to see this. I can't just go by your description because you're a journalist and therefore you're a liar.
Says the journalist.
You know, you can't really... Like, generally speaking, I find it's much less offensive than how it's described or how the headline paints it. I think this was actually much more offensive. I was like, wow, I cannot believe he didn't see that implication when he tweeted it.
Yeah.
But actually, for me, that makes it more believable that he did it totally by accident. That he...
Because it was such... Because the racism was so overt.
Yeah, because, I mean, if you were that way inclined and you worked for the BBC, you would... If you wanted to keep your job, you would certainly never make any jokes along those lines.
The BBC
is a politically incorrect institution. And it was obvious that if you tweeted this and people thought you were being serious, you'd be fired. Justifiably so.
Yeah, really. They wouldn't hire somebody like that.
So the fact that he tweeted it and then deleted it, his initial apology wasn't very good. So it was a bit like, oh, you know, he referred to like diseased minds of people who read
it. I didn't see that when I saw this image because I'm not sick in the head or
something like that. It wasn't a good apology. That said, I don't think there are obviously a few outsider cranks who do think he's a racist, but I don't think most people think he's a racist.
He is a racist in that we are all racists. Have been raised in a racist society.
Okay, apart from in that structural racist way.
But it is an important thing for us to bear in mind, Jimmy.
In terms of how ordinary people who don't, you know, have a gender studies degree use the word racism, he's not a racist.
I do not have a gender studies degree, how dare you? My degree was vaguely useful. In that I can order a Chinese takeaway now, and that's about it.
Without just referring to the numbers.
Yeah, exactly. I think him being fired is justified because, like, I also believe that this was a mistake, and I do also see that seeing the tone of the way that he responded to things, I reckon it took him a while to actually kind of like buy the seriousness of the thing that he'd tweeted out, and understanding like how offensive that actually is, which you kind of see from the diseased minds comment that he made. But then I think that the fact that somebody who is employed by the BBC as a presenter can tweet that out and not realise before they tweet it out that that is a horrifically offensive thing to tweet when it comes to kind of like the historic representation of black people and people of colour, I think that disqualifies you from being able to continue to hold that position because you are a PR nightmare waiting to happen for the organisation.
I just disagree. I mean, I don't think I disagree with everything you just said.
Okay, great.
I mean, for me, the fact he didn't mean it, and, you know, if he'd seen that meaning, that potential meaning, I don't think he would have tweeted it out, and we wouldn't be having this conversation.
Yes, exactly. But then
it was a blunder. And I don't think you need to be able to predict every single, you know, potentially bigoted interpretation of everything you say in order to present a BBC radio show.
But part of your role as the presenter of a BBC radio show is an ability to not create political gaffes like this. And the fact that he is that he has shown that he is not always got the most acute eye and doesn't see that when as something really
stupid.
He's
a radio presenter. He's not the fucking Archbishop of Canterbury.
No, but but everybody else, as soon as it got tweeted out, understood how bad that was.
Well, probably not everyone else. You know, enough people were like, oh my God, this is offensive.
And then great social justice warrior voice there. Really well done.
I mean, it's a South Park thing, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Basically. Yeah, I mean, I just don't... I mean, I'm even surprised that people are genuinely offended by it, in a way. Because it so obviously was a mistake. And, you know...
What do you think should have happened, then?
I think he should have apologised and we should have moved on. Mm-hmm. I don't think we should be having this, like, this really discussing it any further. It was a mistake. That was it. I suppose my question is, what's the half-life on his...
Yeah, long until he gets re-employed?
Yeah, how long should it be before he's hired again in a similar position?
I don't know, but it is... I feel like the tone of the way that he's been covered and the tone of his response to the tweet after that initial kind of, like, stumble that he had shows that he is just kind of, like... He's been told, just apologise, keep your head down, and we'll employ you in a couple of years. That's what it feels like.
Maybe. I mean, he says that somebody from the BBC phoned him up and basically accused him of meaning the tweet in a racist way, which doesn't sound as though it would have included the sort of comments, you know, the promise of a future job that you just suggested. Yeah, I mean, actually, that was... He thinks he should have been fired for the mistake, which is interesting. I don't know. I don't really know why. Like,
didn't notice that. I think that you should be able to notice that if you are going to be a prominent enough person to have a presenter job at the BBC.
I think if you can't see
that, then it's probably not the job for you because you do have to represent the organisation.
I guess so, but no, I don't. I just don't really agree.
You're not ready for that level of responsibility. Maybe he should be going back into like clubs and stuff and doing it that way, but you can't represent the BBC if you're going to be dim enough to have that loaded up in a tweet, ready to go, and before you can extend it,
I don't know, man. It was just a mistake. I think you're overthinking it. Basically. you know, I would employ him, but... You know, I don't really care about that.
And I'm sure there are going to be many opportunities for you to do so in the future, Jimmy.
Yeah, I doubt that. But, I mean, I'm sure LBC will give him a show. They seem to give everyone a show sooner or later. So
yeah, and it took them a very long time to fire Katie Hopkins.
Yes.
Do you remember when she had a show on LBC?
Yeah.
She's one of the legitimate racists.
Yeah, I mean, she's... Yeah, that's fair. I mean, he actually appeared on, this is Danny Baker, appeared on James O'Brien's show and sort of said that he realised it was a mistake and that he thought he should have been fired, but he just didn't like the manner in which he was fired. He thought if they said, you know, we knew you didn't really mean it in that way, but this is embarrassing for us, so we're going to have to let you go, that would have been fine. But don't know if...
But that argument that you just made, the hypothetical argument that would have been more kind of like palatable, I guess, that's the argument that I'm trying to make. It's like
that's what they should have said.
I think that is a very good reason to fire him.
Oh, I don't, because, you know, okay. I don't. Cool. I mean, I think the amount of people who are genuinely upset is tiny, really. And I think most people don't give a shit. Most people would have seen it for what it was, which is an honest mistake. Mm-hmm. And I just don't... I think it's bad that we actually... This is the point I made in an article I wrote for our website. Mm-hmm. Is that...
Right, dishonorable.com.
I think it's bad that it constricts the ability of people to express themselves when you have these incredibly harsh rules for people making mistakes like that. Because it was a mistake.
In what way do you think it was a mistake? He didn't tweet the image by mistake. He chose the image, paired it with a commentary on a mixed race baby, and then sent it out.
But he didn't think about it in those terms. He thought, the royals are a circus, therefore I'm going to tweet a circus-like image, i.e. a monkey dressed up in a suit, with posh people, and then I'm going to send that out. That was how he saw it.
Right.
I mean, you could even argue that it actually fundamentally isn't a racist image because the intent of the author was not in that direction.
I don't think that you can separate people of colour being represented as chimpanzees from intent of the work.
I disagree.
But this is always fundamentally what we disagree with. I think that actually, at the end of the day, sometimes intent does not matter. And actually, the way that a piece of media comes across is more important, and the effect that it has is more important than what the artist actually intended. Artist. It's a fucking Twitter account.
He's a comedian. That's legit.
Yeah, sure. Comedians are funny.
Some of them are. Some of them aren't so funny.
Occasionally. Well, we're not going to agree with this, but
fuck you, Jazza.
Yeah, thank you. Speaking of fucking me, no.
Where is this guy?
No. The EU elections.
Do you think the UK government is just fucking with you by going through this pretense of European elections?
I see the renaissance...
Is this a microaggression against your European identity?
It's an uber-aggression.
It's a macro-aggression.
Macro-aggression. Huge macro-aggression. No, the fact that Nigel Farage is back on my television screens is a massive macro-aggression.
I don't remember that. I mean, I don't really watch lots of...
No, there was definitely a little bit... There was a period. Kind of like post-election for maybe like a year or so.
You mean post-2017?
Post-referendum.
Okay.
Post-2016, where he wasn't really around, and I just want him to leave. I'm annoyed because the Brexit Party are going to win, because they're the only people with a single cohesive message. They're
pulling ahead
this
at the moment, aren't they? They're all about 34.
They are tying or just ahead of Labour. The Conservatives are...
I know, they're significant. By some polls, they're significantly ahead of Labour.
Some of them, yes.
There was a poll that put them on, like, it was around 35. It was actually very slightly above. I mean, when you account for margin of error, it was the same amount as the Tories and Labour combined, basically.
A very recent one, right?
Yeah, one of the very recent ones. That is an outlier. Think it's,
yes, it is. Yeah. Most of them, the Brexit Party has about like 30 or just under 30, or that's where kind of like the polling average
is. So Labour's on
25. And Labour are like 25 plus ish.
The Tories are third with.
Well, that poll that you were talking about had the Tories in fourth place.
Below Lib Dems.
Below the Lib Dems, yeah. Which I really enjoy. But I find this really frustrating because the Brexit Party has been created so that this is basically a rerun of the second referendum that I really want us to have. But, I mean, yet again, there is a single united voice for leave and then see what happens, and a disjointed thing of, oh, stay, but like...
Maybe
with more green
policy.
You've got
the Brexit Party, you've got UKIP, who are doing very badly, they're like 4 or 5%, I think.
Yeah. Because of a friend of the podcast, Carl Benjamin.
Are we just amassing like lists of people that actually don't like the podcast and won't interact with us that we refer to as friend of the podcast?
Yes.
Okay.
Correct.
You've lost my train of thought. You've got the Tories, who are also allegedly pro-Brexit, although they have a Remain leadership.
No, that's not true. Well, that's my Nigel Farage.
Okay. And you have Labour, who have a policy. I think.
Who have written down a policy? They've misplaced it.
They've
somewhere.
Written down several policies, and they're still in the process of choosing which was which.
Yeah.
I've heard some journalists argue that that's a bit unfair, that Labour's policy is intelligible, but it's not intelligible to me personally, so I'm going to discount that as...
Okay, let me try. Labour's policy is, if they aren't able to come to an agreement with the current Theresa May government on the withdrawal agreement that they're negotiating right now, then whatever happens... outside of that, it needs to go back to the public to be voted on.
Yes, that is roughly, yeah. I think that is what their policy is.
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of having their cake and eat it, having their cake and eating it somewhat.
It's being all things to all people, but actually it's being no things to all people. Arguably, right? Mm. I'm frustrated because there is the one place where hardcore leavers are going to go to vote, and that's for the Brexit Party, whereas the Remain vote gets split between, three or four or five regional and minor parties. Mm. So you have Plaid, the SNP, then you have the Greens, Change UK, and the Lib Dems.
Yeah.
And I am obviously very happy that the Lib Dems are doing so well and kind of being seen as a legitimate kind of anti-Brexit force.
They launched their European manifesto as under the banner of bollocks to Brexit, didn't they?
Yeah, I did quite enjoy that. I feel like there's a lot of posh people that are going to not vote for them because of that, though.
I don't... Vince Cable, maybe I have the wrong measure of the man, but I doubt he's ever actually said the word bollocks.
Well, there was that at party conference last year, he tried to say erotic spasm.
Mm.
And said erotic spasm or something. Like, just couldn't say something quite so salacious.
He doesn't seem like a man who can swear properly.
Yeah, bless him.
Which I think is a character failing, frankly.
I think that it's something to be, these days, in 2019, somebody who stumbles over a swear word, I think it's quite endearing.
Mm. But would you trust them with the nuclear codes?
I don't think anybody should have any nuclear codes.
I mean, that's a separate argument.
Let's put that over to a self-learning algorithm.
That was always my thing with Tim Farron, though. It's like, on some level, I just didn't really trust him to be ruthless. do you know what I mean? He just didn't seem
apart from to the gays.
Yeah. I mean, if a bill came forward to ban gay marriage, he'd be all over that shit.
Yeah, you know what I mean? He wouldn't be ruthless unless you were also a sinner. And
aren't we all sinners? Maybe he would have been. Maybe he was secret ruthless. I'm trying to think where he'd sit on the chaotic good or chaotic evil spectrum. And I don't know it well enough. But I feel there could be like a secret evil. Like he's like a dark horse of
I like to think that I fit in chaotic neutral. Just flailing. General flailing. Have you decided as a representative for the 52%, have you decided where your vote's going to go on the 23rd of May? You are registered, is that correct?
I am registered.
Yeah. By the way, listener, it's too late now, so don't bother.
I'd assume most of our listeners are registered to vote.
I bloody hope so, otherwise what have we been doing for the past 130 episodes?
Mm. I don't know.
Maybe we've discouraged people actually to engage with the political process, but that's another.
I mean, that has certainly been my intention from the start.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to do the working of this in my head somewhat. I'm obviously not going to vote for Change UK because they are the Ramona party.
Mm-hmm.
No offence. I mean, if that's what you're into, I think you should vote Change UK. Mm-hmm. And you can vote for Nicholas Matsy, friend of the podcast, if you're in...
Oh, the South East.
South East. Mm-hmm. There you go.
Although he is sixth on the list on a party polling at about 4%
right now. You can still vote for him.
You can still vote for him. But he is very unlikely to get into the European
Party. He is a nice chap, though.
He is a lovely chap. His shirts are too tight.
Whoa there. Okay. Can't vote Lib Dems for the same reason. Sorry, Vince. Can't vote Greens for the same reason. Can't vote SNP because they don't feel candidates.
Why? Be clear why you're not voting for them. Because they're a Ramona party.
I won't vote for any Remain party, basically.
Not even a party that thinks that we should have a second referendum?
No.
That aren't explicitly revoke?
I don't think we should have a second referendum.
Mm.
Is my view.
So where do you stand on Labour?
Well, that's the interesting thing, is that in some ways Labour's position is actually quite pragmatic.
Oh no, you're the one they've been thinking of. Yeah, this whole time Jimmy's just been consulting for them.
Yes, that is true. I can now reveal to you. I don't want a second referendum. I think it will look a lot like a stitch-up if we have a second referendum and then Remain wins. If we have a second referendum and Leave wins, we're sort of back where we started, really. So in that sense, their position isn't pragmatic. But, you know, in some way, you know, you can see how you'd pitch it that way to get us out of our current situation, I think.
So why aren't you voting? Because you've expressed your desire to just get it done and for Theresa May's deal to go through and make a purse out of the pig's ear. Why won't you vote Tory?
I think I've just got a fundamental...
Is it because they're a mess?
Are they any more of a mess than most of the other parties?
I think they're more of a mess.
I'm not sure that's true. They're just a government. Like, when you really think about it, Labour still fundamentally has a leadership whose politics are very, very different from its membership, which is actually the position of the Tories, roughly. Change UK, you know, is a sort of dissident Blairite group. Who have no real policies or manifesto beyond Remain.
I think it's really scary with Change UK. I feel like they're not going to exist after this.
I hope so.
They're going. There's a really high. There's a 2-to-1 chance I saw of them not getting a single seat.
That was Tom Harwood tweeted at Ladbrokes or something.
Friend of the podcast, Tom Harwood,
Guido Fawkes reporter,
and friend of the podcast, Tom.
More importantly, where was I going with this? I mean, Change UK should all have joined the Lib Dems policy-wise. They only didn't for branding reasons. So
I think
fuck 'em.
The Lib Dems are good.
Really? I don't know. There is a bit of me, to be frank, that wants to vote for the Brexit Party, even though I think that they are a collection of some of the people in the Brexit Party, not least its leader Nigel Farage, are quite unpleasant. But they do.
There's some people in that, but they did release their broadcast this week. It was very good.
I haven't actually seen it yet, but I did. People
it's
were tweeting
quite
it. It's
brilliant,
good. Yeah.
Actually. To the point where I was almost like, yes, we should take back control. Yeah, we did tell them what we wanted. With lots of like people, like single mums, crossing their arms and being resolute. Their branding's spot on. They know how to get... They know how to say one thing again and again and again.
So there was a... This is a funny sort of tangent, but there's a professor of clinical psychology who filed a complaint with the Electoral Commission this week.
Oh, because there's an arrow.
Because if you get the ballot paper out, and some people have their postal votes now, so you can see this online, the Brexit logo has an arrow pointing to the right, which is where your boxes.
Yeah.
And to be honest, initially I laughed my fucking arse off that this idiot professor had done this. And then I saw the ballot paper, I thought, sort of has a point. It sort of sticks out, actually.
Is this what is actually tempting you to vote for the Brexit Party?
It's just, if you open the ballot paper and, like, just look at the logos, the Brexit Party logo is one of the most striking, I think, anyway. But it does point to where the ballot box is. If you go by nudge theory often only like yields a very minor change, but over a large population, if you're talking like 2% of people whose vote that shifts in this instance, that's potentially significant. So I see where he's coming from. I hope they toss his complaint out anyway, because it's like ridiculous. I don't know, for me it is sort of Brexit Party on the grounds that I still think Brexit should happen. Apparently they're planning on running candidates in the next general election. I certainly won't be voting for them in that.
And they steal so many seats from the Conservatives. There's only been like one YouGov poll where they're included in Westminster voting intention.
Yeah.
So you shouldn't really, you can't really draw proper conclusions from that.
I don't think you can.
But they come out as the third largest party.
Yeah, one of them put them at like 35 seats. I think that would make them the fourth largest party if you include the SNP. But
isn't the SNP on 34 seats?
No, the SNP, in one forecast I saw, the SNP were up to 50 seats.
Oh, how exciting. Good for them again. So they win all of Scotland again.
Yeah.
Great.
Other than that, I mean, I don't know, man. The Tories, I guess I can see why I would vote for them, because I do think the withdrawal agreement is probably the only way through this.
Do you think you'd be even more tempted to vote for them were there a change of leader? And maybe if several people... Thank you. Very good segue. And perhaps if...
Wait, who are you voting for before we segue into
Who do you think I'm voting for? Who do you think... Yeah, obviously. Cut me and I bleed Nick Clegg, like, for goodness sake. Yeah, they are so lovely. And they are the only...
I still think I broadly still do like Lib Dems. So, like, the fact that they got quite a few seats in the latest local elections, I was pleased about. Mm-hmm, but I think their policy on Brexit is wrong. Like, I think it's almost immoral, like, frankly.
That's a bit Twittery, isn't it? Come on. It's not immoral. I think that, like, suggesting there being a second referendum, I don't think is immoral.
I mean, their whole bollocks to Brexit thing is a bit stronger than second referendum, but yeah, I think...
But that has been their stance forever. Their stance has always been explicitly pro-European and stay in the European Union. It's at least honest.
It is honest, I will give you that. But for me, anyone who actually doesn't think the referendum should be respected in some form, I do kind of look down on that. I know that's like... your position isn't exactly that, but it's pretty close to that, I think.
Yeah, probably. Probably
you think the referendum is a second referendum is a fair way out of this, and I think that it's
been no. I think it's the only fair way out of this for me. But also, I think it's the only way of getting out of a political impasse.
Yes,
I think not only so. Like, I would want it to solve my problem, but a three-way referendum solves a lot of other problems around the Brexit process that I think need to be put to bed. So it may turn out really good for me, but it just stops us being in kind of this infinite loop of people trying to compromise over things that then nobody's actually willing to compromise on.
Yeah.
The Conservatives... are having a leadership contest without there being a vacancy for the leader. So we have...
In some ways, they've been doing that almost since the 2017
general election. Almost since the 2017 general election. So people who've explicitly said that they will run include Dominic Raab, who was the second Brexit secretary. After David Davis. Yeah. Liz Truss.
Yep.
Who... Isn't
Chief Secretary to the Treasury.
Yeah, who isn't Esther McVeigh.
Right. But both blonde women.
But both blonde middle-aged women who I always mix up. Mm. And the fact that they're both... Although now Liz Truss has done a very striking photo shoot on the front of a magazine where she tells people that we should build on the Greenbelt.
Yeah, so a million homes on the Greenbelt.
Great, excellent.
Are you anti homes on the Greenbelt?
I think that the Greenbelt is an outdated term that I don't think actually means what people think it means.
Okay.
But we should definitely build more homes.
Yes.
But also this whole it's very really hilarious seeing people doing NIMBYism about other homes. I'm like, well, where do you want them? Where do you want these houses for people to live in to go? Like under a rock where you can't see it?
Somewhere else.
Oh, for goodness.
Somewhere it doesn't devalue my asset that I've spent 30 years paying a mortgage into. Paying off a mortgage for, I should say.
Yeah, well. So I saw all of these kind of... It's been over the last week or so there's been explicit kind of moving and shaking towards there being... people positioning themselves in the run-up to a new leadership election for the Conservatives. Mm. And it's just felt really odd, because Brexit hasn't happened yet. We have European elections coming. It just seemed like a really odd time to be making those movements. Mm. Why do you think that this is happening now? Help explain.
Oh, God. I don't know. Am I supposed to know?
Oh, I was thinking
you should have told me ahead of time. I'd have done some research and come up with a plausible explanation. There was that... So, we didn't really cover this, but there was the whole debate around the rule change, wasn't there? As in the 1922... I referenced this in the intro. The 1922 Committee of Tory Backbenchers were discussing changing the rules so that a leadership election could be triggered every 6 months rather than every year, as is the current rule. And this was contingent This was made contingent on Theresa May confirming an exit timetable
for herself,
right?
Rather than of the European Union.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Just to be very clear.
There's lots of leaving happening. I don't. Where did that end up in the end? I sort of lost track of that story.
She went no,
and they went okay.
Fair, Theresa.
But yeah, I assume it's connected to that, is that there's just a general sense that she needs to fuck off now. Is that fair?
Yeah, I guess.
I mean, that has been for a while.
But then how is that going to make anything better?
Well, it might mean that, you know, some of these Tories...
They have to negotiate something...
Get to advance their careers, which is the main thing, I would say.
Yeah, but do you want to advance your career into this shit show? Who wants to run to be leader now? I think if you're positioning yourself to be a leader before we actually leave the European Union, you are nutty. And that should disqualify you from running for leader. And all of these people who are positioning themselves, hoping to become the leader before this new October the 31st deadline, just in time for Halloween.
That's the deadline. That is the date we're going to leave the EU now. Unless something else intervenes.
Unless something else happens.
Okay, in the meantime.
But their only kind of like way of being able to do anything other than the current withdrawal agreement is to leave without a deal.
Yes, those are the only two options. Well, the third option is remain, but the two leaving options.
Wouldn't it be nice if the people will ask which of those three options that are actually actionable they wanted to happen?
Actionable. Mm-hmm. Actionable. Platform. Opportunity. Solution.
Cascading. Waterfall.
Who would you vote?
None of them, obviously. No, unless Ruth Davidson became the leader of the Tory party.
Is she the only...
I'm not voting anywhere near that mess. Even if the Lib Dems...
You actually have a Tory party membership. I have your card.
This is actually a fair point. I do get a vote in the next Tory leadership election.
Whereas I don't. Maybe I should join, just have a vote. I don't actually care.
This is why I joined. It's very expensive though, actually.
How much is it?
It's like 30 quid.
That's too much.
It is too much, isn't it?
I don't care enough.
I don't know. I'd have to see... there'd have to be a really Remainery candidate. Like a Philip Hammond ran.
Do you think?
Yeah, somebody who'd be very sensible.
I mean, as you say, though, the problem...
Just not Liz Truss, for goodness sake. The lady comes across as a sociopath.
So we had this argument before we started recording. I think Liz Truss... Although I don't necessarily like her as a candidate, I think she has quite a strong image within certain media circles.
Yeah, I don't understand it.
You don't understand her image?
Her image to me, how she comes across to me, is always out of her depth. Always happy to be there, but no idea what's going on, is what I get from Liz Truss.
Interesting. See, she was involved in, that was like some Tory think tank, I don't know, it's hard to keep track of them all, but she sort of recast herself as a sort of like, almost libertarian type candidate, right? She's like...
Tom Harwood, friend of the podcast, is very happy about her announcement.
I mean, that says it all. But she's recast herself as like, millennials these days, they want to like order food via Deliveroo.
Yeah, they don't care about workers' rights and stuff.
Like, they want to get an Uber to do buzzwords, tech.
Yeah.
Fill in the blanks yourself.
Yeah. But the one thing that they aren't doing, as has been said to her, I think a couple of times when she's sat on like pundit things, is they're not voting Tory.
Yeah, I mean, that's there have been quite a few attempts by the Tories to claw back the youth votes in some form. Do millennials really give that much of a shit about Uber?
I also don't know that many millennials that spend the amount of money on, like, Deliveroo and stuff. I think that stuff like Uber, people are more likely to take the night bus than an Uber home.
Yeah.
Because it is very expensive. Yeah.
Well,
and most young people do not have that money. Yeah. Yeah. And so I think there is this false equation of young people liking all of these tech things because it's tech. Whereas actually, it's just more stuff that we can't afford.
Yeah, possibly. I mean, one of the main, stereotypically one of the main drivers of like people switching from voting left wing to right wing is actually when they get a mortgage out on a house or start a family or that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people attribute the collapse in the younger vote for the Tory to the unaffordability of mm-hmm. the housing market.
Which is why we should build on the green belt.
I mean, that is one of her policies, to be fair. So, you know, that's...
Yeah, that's one of her policies in a non-existent leadership election.
Mm.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
I think that the Conservative Party may be, like, collapsing in front of our own eyes. Like, I think it genuinely just has finally ripped itself to shreds. And if it becomes the Tom Harwood Party, frankly, the Libertarian Party... Those libertarian views are going to be kind of, the light is going to be shone on them, and not many people are actually that into there not being any workers' rights or on people not being able to get proper like holidays and there not being a minimum wage. People quite like a lot of those things.
I agree. I will say on the idea of the Tories collapsing though, there was I haven't brought this up on the podcast before, but there was a lecture by David Runciman of the Talking Talking Politics podcast, yeah.
And of Cambridge University.
He was talking about the idea of, in terms of the lifespan of any given thing, you're unlikely, if you're watching at any point in time, you're unlikely to be at the start or the end of the lifespan of that thing.
Right, yeah.
Right? I mean, it's sort of a roundabout way of saying the fact that the Tory party has lasted several hundred years means that it is actually... If you look at it from that point of view, it's unlikely to be imminently collapsing. At some mm-hmm. point, the Tory party will end. But just the fact that it has lasted so long suggests that it will actually continue lasting, and it's unlikely that we are at the end point. We're much more likely to be anywhere else.
But I feel like we have this overhang of the idea that it is the most successful... It's the most successful democratic voting getter. Or
it's the most successful party in...
In democratic history, politics, yeah. Globally, yeah. Right? It's won more elections than any party ever has.
Yeah, it's mainly because it's lasted so long.
It could be, because of that longevity.
Yeah.
They haven't actually won an election. Well, they won an election in 2015, technically, right?
15,
But had a majority of, like, a handful of...
12, six, I think, or something, yeah.
And actually haven't had, like, a big thumping majority since Thatcher. Since the 1980s.
Yeah, they had a... What was the majority under John Major?
That was... Also, teens.
Yeah.
Like, it was in the teens, the majority they had then. Hmm. And so this idea that they're this great kind of, like, adaptable...
They got 40% of the vote at the last election.
Yeah, but then, like, so did Labour.
So did Labour. But actually, the last election was a great retrenchment for the two big parties.
Mm-hmm.
It's not obvious how this is all going to pan out. And I think it... For me, at least... Ignoring some of the local factors which are enticing from a news point of view, I think the likelihood is that we're going to get out of all of this and Labour and the Tories are still going to be standing. Mm. Fundamentally.
I'm going to continue to vote Libby Dibby Wemmy Wemmy.
I mean, the likelihood is that Lib Dems will keep standing as well. It's the, it's not that surprising that Change UK is looking like it's on the verge of a collapse already.
Mm-hmm. Not only because they keep on changing... Their name.
And logo.
Yeah. Less.
It's a terrible name. The branding is quite bad, I think.
Yeah.
From all these slick Blairite politicians, you'd have thought, but no.
No. Yeah. It is not you, Chuka. It is not you. So, what did you know about James Charles before I suggested this as...
A topic
for us.
So I didn't know, I hadn't heard of James Charles, didn't know who he was, and I fully expect to forget about him within the next week. that's where I am with James Charles.
Great, excellent. So for those of you who don't know or have forgotten the introduction to this podcast...
Repetition is important in education.
It is,
and
yeah.
We're nothing if not educators.
So part of the reason that we're talking about this is because love a bit of YouTube drama, but also to kind of talk about once again like this rise of the digital celebrity, who will often use kind of like who will gain all of this power, and because of often a lack of a structure, an official structure around that individual, will then end up misusing that power. So James Charles has been accused...
I think power is an interesting word there. I would not have used that word, but we can discuss that in a bit.
Oh, interesting. I think that this is all about power. Mm. This is all about fame, money and power, and like social climbing. And
I think we probably agree on what we're talking about, but I would mm-hmm. use the word power.
Okay. But he... What I find really funny about this is obviously not the fact that he's been accused of like sexually manipulating people, because that's bad, but the fact that he had a fight with another makeup guru called oh god, what's her name?
Something Tati
Westbrook,
or
something,
isn't it?
Tati Westbrook. who got really annoyed at him because he endorsed a vitamin company that wasn't her own.
And she owns a vitamin company.
Yes,
right. And is she the Joe Rogan of beauty? beauty blogging.
It was actually like sleeping pills or something like that. James Charles decided to endorse another company, and so she then made a 40-minute video about how he is being sexually predatory towards straight men, that he sees as like a challenge.
That is cold.
Which is part of the reason I really like this story.
40 minutes as well.
I wonder how many mid-rolls there were. But they... he's ended up losing like 100 subscribers. He lost 100 subscribers in 24 hours.
Anyway, you mean a
million subscribers.
100 whole subscribers. I mean, that for me would be significant. Yeah. But for him, not so much, I don't think.
Do you think that there is a way of being able to hold creators to account in a better way than basically flaming them on social media when it comes to them misusing their power? And what actually was your problem with me using the word power?
I mean, in a way, I don't really think... I think that they don't have power in, like, a conventional sense, although...
What do you see as conventional?
I mean, like, a court can send you to jail. That, mm-hmm. that to me, is power. Mm-hmm. And... I sort of don't want to get too bogged down to the semantics of this, though it is my fault because I brought it up. so I should probably answer. But there's basically a spectrum between, I guess, influence and power. And power is like the harder stuff where you just have freedom to do things without any sort of checks. And influence is more like you can steer people to do things or try and persuade people to do things, but ultimately you can't force them to do things. Mm-hmm. And I guess actually he can't really force people to do... You know, someone like this guy, was it James Charles?
Mm-hmm.
He can use his status to manipulate people into doing things, which I think is the point you're getting at. He doesn't have fundamental coercive power, I don't think.
No.
I see this...
But like, I think that it is a use of that. I think that ability to manipulate because of the influence you have is a type of power.
Okay. Well,
because you see it with like famous rock stars, or
the rock star analogy, I think, is very apt. I mean, all of these YouTube scandals always sound a lot to me like early rock, mm-hmm. like rock and roll stories, where I mean, particularly sort of bands from the 60s did a lot of shit sexually that they mm-hmm. probably shouldn't have done, and a lot of it never really caught up with them as well. So, I mean, you know, really a lot of it was just sort of sleeping with teenage girls, some of whom probably were the wrong side of the age of consent.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, it is very similar to that, I think. And because these people make so much money, if we're going back to the YouTubers thing, like, celebrity YouTubers are the talent. And I think you're right that in those scenarios, a lot of the people around them are very reluctant to say, you shouldn't really be doing this.
There is a long history of a lot of his peers telling him, or like really subtly being like, you should probably stop hitting on all of those straight dudes.
Mm.
And of him being, like Tati talks about in this 40 long, 40-minute long video about inappropriate suggestions. Like, basically, James Charles was sexually harassing this waiter that they had.
Yeah.
Like, being very explicit about what he wanted to do to him or what he wanted the waiter to do to him.
Mm.
And I think that there is also this interesting dynamic of an effeminate gay man, which James Charles is, having that power and using it. And I think that also straight men are so unused to being on the receiving end of that kind of predatory behaviour that it's very possible that... I'm surprised that this has actually caught on so much, because I thought that people would end up looking at that kind of dynamic and seeing... and actually seeing a traditional power dynamic where there's a masculine man and a feminine man, and you'd think that it wouldn't be possible for there to be power wielded by the more feminine one.
That is an interesting point, I think. Mm-hmm. It depends on the scenario, I suppose. I haven't really read into a lot of the allegations, but...
So he's done stuff like, there was another kind of like smaller creator who he befriended, flew him out to Coachella.
Which is an American music festival.
It's Glastonbury for attractive people.
Basically. Harsh, but yeah.
Yeah, no, let's be fair, it's true.
Okay.
So flew him out, and then basically had a huge hissy fit because the straight guy who had made it clear that he was straight didn't actually want to do anything sexual with James Charles, despite the fact that he'd flown him out.
Yeah, I mean, that is bad, but I suppose that the fact that the straight guy in that scenario could just say nah and then walks away is a bit, you know.
Yeah, but that is like, that's only the one instance. That's the power dynamic, right?
Yeah, I mean, it is that thing we've talked previously about, like the idea of sort of workplace romance, and the idea of, say, a senior member of staff flirting with a junior member of staff is actually dodgier than like two equally junior members of staff flirting with one another, because of, as you said, power dynamic.
Power dynamic.
So I mean, yeah, obviously there are, it does sound a bit dodgy what he was doing, but I mean, is that sort of all the allegation is, that occasionally he's been a bit fooled with straight men who didn't necessarily
and being like
the attention.
Emotionally manipulative,
yeah,
and used, and like been explicit about the fact that I can do what I want because I'm a celebrity.
Yeah,
like apparently those are words that came out of his mouth, especially with respect to that the waiter scenario.
Yeah, I mean, it's... I suppose that the thing is, if you're not there, because obviously these stories sound bad when they're being related, but there's a bit of a line between someone being an arsehole and somebody doing something that should be illegal. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm, like, and a lot of these... I mean, the whole thing about emotional manipulation is... I'm not saying it doesn't exist, but it's very hard to judge how wrong it is,
yeah.
I think, in a given scenario. Because someone can be emotionally manipulative and the other person can just not take their shit.
Mm-hmm.
So it often depends how it's received as well.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think should happen in this instance? I mean, what is anything happening at all?
We haven't heard from, like... So he's a person who gets an awful lot from endorsements and from kind of, like, brand endorsements, especially, like, in... I mean, this is how all of the makeup gurus make... so much, like millions and millions of dollars. We haven't seen him be dropped from anything yet, so it will be interesting to see what the fallout of that is.
The million followers thing is quite significant in that instance, though, because if you're a brand, you can say, we sponsored you. There's so much backlash against you, you've lost a million followers. That is just, that's proof how bad the perception is here.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, I don't know how these contracts are drawn up, but
that's what happens when you build your brand and like your empire on like fickle teenage viewers, to be frank. I think it's a lot easier for them to press the
unsubscribe button
on the back of some drama. But then also, this is how these influencers stay relevant a lot of the time, is not necessarily deliberately, but it's through drama, and they get talked about an awful lot because they are, I mean, a lot of them don't really help themselves by being
arseholes
and like really enjoying the drama and that kind of stuff.
Well, it's like the classic celebrity thing of having a paparazzi Paparazzo Brazzo or whatever the word would be, getting a tip off that you're going to stumble out of a nightclub at 2 a.m. that morning, which is done deliberately to get you in the papers the following day, so your name is still out there.
I think that I would be surprised if there weren't some fallout in terms of
you think he's going to lose some brands.
Yeah, I think he's going to lose some brands.
I mean, PewDiePie, who we mentioned earlier, was dropped by Disney, was it? Was it Disney? There was a Wall Street Journal article which said, which I think brought up the whole...
I mean, he lost an awful lot in terms of, YouTube original series was dropped.
Yeah, I think he did lose some sponsorship over over his whole Deaf to Jews scandal.
But now he has, less than 2 years later, he has streaming exclusives and is being paid millions for brand deals and stuff like that.
Well, I think there's a certain constituency of you know YouTube audience. We mentioned Carl Benjamin earlier. That really
friend of the podcast.
Really don't give a shit about that whole thing. You know, I mean, he's PewDiePie. I don't follow him closely, but he is somewhat in that alt-right kind of orbit now, isn't he? Content-wise, do you not think?
No. I don't think. I disagree with that.
Yeah,
very strongly. Yeah, he has unfortunately a lot of his audience, I think, overlap with it.
That's what I mean. I'm not saying he's producing content along those lines, but he.
Yeah, I don't think his content ever has been. Yeah. His content has been provocative and inappropriate and cheeky, but he's never been in the same vein to kind of like
to Carl Benjamin,
exactly,
or Sargon of Akkad, to use his YouTube name. That's what I mean, to clarify. I'm not saying he's producing subtly racist content.
But it's very interesting to see. I think that somebody like PewDiePie and somebody like James Charles are actually kind of like the male and female kind of like two sides of the same coin. So they are.
So James Charles is female.
Yeah, he's mainly James Charles is a guy, but his audience is majority female.
Oh right.
So he's like the kind of content that a lot of young, especially young women, will be watching. Whereas PewDiePie is the equivalent for young men.
Young men, yeah.
And so actually, these two types of content producers do end up being incredibly influential in like the kind of stuff that people are watching. This is what people are watching. They're not watching reruns of Buffy the Vampire Slayer like I was when I was a teenager.
Yeah. I mean, you obviously were into YouTube and made YouTube videos from like a very early point, and you've still continued to do it for how YouTube's been around 15 years now, right?
Yeah, I've been doing it for 12 years.
How comfortable are you with the idea that there are some content creators who do have a young teenage audience? That might not be the majority of their audience, but it's some
almost
of it.
Always the majority of an audience. I mean, it's my largest demographic is
teenage.
Well, is 18 to 25 year olds.
So okay, 18 to 25. But the sort of tween audience, let's say, like 12 to 18, say. Do you think that you know, given that. This is a slight tangent from the previous topic, but do you think that it's being appropriately regulated, at least from like YouTube's point of view, having those people that are involved in some of this drama, which can be a bit sketchy, or say do have a seam with some of those more problematic.
YouTube is trying to do an awful lot to kind of like adjust for. I think YouTube ended up being a default, especially even younger than tweens, for like parents with like young children, and we've seen ways that has kind of been manipulated by really bad actors.
Well, there was that whole thing about those weird 3D animated videos
exactly.
with cartoon characters doing creepy things.
Like partaking in like fetish stuff and things like that.
Yeah.
I think that actually ultimately a lot of this, and I don't think this is how YouTube actually sees it, but a lot of this is stems from ignorance as to what teenagers are watching when they're watching stuff online, and what they're engaging with online. And I think that responsibility first and foremost falls to like the adults who are raising them. And I don't know And, like, I think that there's also, especially when you look at stuff like Fortnite, like, these addictive qualities to, like, website interfaces and to gaming interfaces and stuff like that, that can be what people are worried about, how that affects kind of, like, the development of children and stuff.
Yeah.
I think that there's a lot of sensationalism around it as well, where actually this is just kind of, like, the type of media that people consume, and people have all, we've always had, like, couch potatoes or bookworms or that kind of stuff. My answer is I don't know.
I think we can leave it there then.
Excellent. Thank you for listening to the Righteous Honourable podcast. Please, if you've gone this far, subscribe for goodness sake.
Yeah.
Also, you can follow us on the internet, Twitter at Right Dishonour. Just Right Dishonour, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm at Jazza John.
I'm at JDE Nichols.
And we like you very much. Thank you. Goodbye.